Blog Talk Radio.
September already. It's September 5th. And for those of you like myself in the United States, it's Labor Day. It's the Labor Day weekend. Hey, what does that mean? What does Labor Day mean? Okay, we kick back, we relax, we go away, we visit friends, we get away, we don't do anything, I guess. Is that what that means? For me, who has recently moved into a new location with two bedrooms, one of my bedrooms was, I think I mentioned ago that I took a storage unit and collapsed it basically and moved it into my spare bedroom. So my spare bedroom is a storage unit. So what I'm going to do for Labor Day is I'm going to break down boxes, get rid of old, unused material, donate things. And, you know, it's like getting rid of the clutter, you know, and there's a vibration about that. You know, when you've been storing stuff for years and years and years, in the back of your mind, you know, I got these old books, I got clothes from when I was this old, and I got family relics, I got stuff people have given me, and I got just, you know, a lot of it's pure junk. And I think one of the really cool key things about it is if you have a friend, family member who can come with you and look at some of the stuff, they can go, hey, do you really need this? You might go, you might start off for the first hour and go, yeah, oh God, that's an old pair of shoes I had. I got to keep those. Well, yeah, right. Do you really need them? So for me, it's getting rid of the clutter. So for my Labor Day, and by the way, I hope you do have a Labor Day. I hope the week's starting out great for you. For me, it's getting rid of clutter. So moving junk is going to be a big part of. I'm going to try to get rid of everything as much as I can because I have a 12 by 14 foot room, 12 foot by 14 foot room, and it's completely filled with boxes and some furniture. So if you can imagine that, and it's up to about 6 feet. So that's a lot of boxes. So, hey, I got to get rid of the clutter. Most of you will probably be like, I'm going to sit in my chair. I'm going to kick back. Hey, you know, let's try that new craft beer. Well, that's me at least, you know, have a craft beer or just kick back and go, hey, I'm just going to rock, watch TV or drive around. Hey, it's a relaxation. So I hope you are enjoying it. I hope you do have a great week. I posted a photo of a Vimana, which is an Indian from India, an ancient ship. And just a few days ago, I had someone send me an article called The Secrets That Every Vimana Pilot Must Learn. And it's a document that was transcribed from an ancient text or verse from the Anatta, which is a Hindu script that's very, very old. And apparently it's 6,000 years old. And in this description, and by the way, I posted this on the Facebook page, and the it's Facebook Earth Ancient. So always go to the group page. So when you're dialing in on Facebook, the group page has this 32 secrets. And it's fascinating because when you read through these, and you look at this image of this ship, I had to wonder how in the heck did they get this thing airborne, because it looks huge. And I think I mentioned last week, it reminded me of one of the craft that are in the movie, The League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. And I mean, that's that Sean Connery movie, but every vehicle in that movie was really cool. I mean, just really, really well thought out and really cool. But these 32 secrets have everything from propellants and fuels, and they discuss a lot of different types of mercuries, red mercury and things like that. But I'm going to read this one. This is number 6, and this is one of the secrets. And I just go taking a look at it. And, you know, people go, hey, is this all fantasy or whatever? But when you read some of the details that they're discussing, I kind of wonder if these secrets actually were the keys to getting these craft going. Now, 6,000 years ago, our scientists are like, well, we're hunters and gatherers, you know, huge foreheads, dragging our arms on the ground, things like that. Well, as you know, Earth Ancients is about discovering and uncovering societies, unknown civilizations that once ruled the earth. But anyhow, this is number 6 of the 32 secrets that a pilot must learn. And here it is. It's called, number 6 is Dishra. And I'm going to read this. This is from the text. This is a translation. By collision of the electric power and wind power in the atmosphere, a glow is created, whose reflection is Visma Kinaniski, or mirror, at the front of the Vimana, and by its manipulation produces a Mayaka Vimana, or a camouflaged Vimana. Now, that's kind of a weird description of some kind of the sheen on the body of a Vimana to keep it camouflaged. Now, a lot of the descriptions of these Vimanas in these sacred texts are of warfare. They describe them as bolts of lightning, which are some kind of electrical weapon. There's proof that nuclear weapons were used in specific parts of ancient India. In fact, a number of articles have been written about one area where there's actual bodies that have, and this is something that happened over 10,000 years ago. So anyhow, check that out. Vimanas are very curious. The descriptions that I've read are very detailed. For a scripture that's 6,000-7,000 years old, the details are just a little too much for someone's wild imagination. They're just too detailed. So Earth Ancients, Facebook, the Vimana, I put up like 12 photos of this one ship that was really based on some writing. So check it out. Vimanas are very cool. You know, since I started Earth Ancients over a year and a half ago, we have not had any native elders on the program. And for a number of years, when I was a program director, I always had one or two elders to speak about native traditions, especially within the United States, because not only are they the oldest native people, but they have traditions that go way, way, way back. And as you know, we're all interested in ancient United States, ancient America. And I used to have a guy named Wallace Black Elk on, who was a Lakota elder who spoke about Native traditions. And he talked a little bit about star people, but he was more into living the right life, living by the earth, and being focused on caring for the earth. And he passed away like 20 years ago. And then there was a Hopi elder named Thomas Binyaka, who I was very close with, he traveled with me around the country at various conferences. And he passed away about 15 years ago. And then there's been a handful of people since. When Dances with Wolves came out with Kevin Costner about 15 years ago, a number of the elders that were featured in that program were true Native Americans. And I had a number of those people with me on the show, but most of those people have passed away. Recently, I discovered the work of Clifford Mahoti, who is a Zuni elder in the sacred Kachina clan in era 72. And he's been talking quite a bit about star people, but what's really unique about him is he's been granted the ability to speak about Lemuria. And they call it, it's actually named in the Zuni tradition. And so I called him a couple of weeks ago, and we are going to do a unique recording interview in a couple of, it's probably going to be in a couple of weeks. And we're going to broadcast it in September. The perspective that he discussed with me is mind blowing because, as you know, Mu was in the Pacific Ocean, and it dates back hundreds of thousands of years ago, according to him. And so look for that. Clifford Mahoti, A-H-T-Y, is a Zuni elder. And you can actually go on YouTube and you can hear some of his lectures. Now, you may also have heard him on the TV series Ancient Aliens. He was part of a series on understanding star people. So that is something that I don't talk a lot about, but within a lot of Native traditions, the star people are huge, huge influence. And so to get that information is kind of completes a lot of ancient traditions, ancient prophecies. And so I'm looking forward to having him on the program. We'll have him on probably, like I said, in a couple of weeks, Clifford Mahoti. As always, I want to remind people to go to the Facebook page and continually keep an eye on what's going on, because I post a tremendous amount of material there. Facebook Earth Ancients groups, I mentioned it a little while ago. And our sponsor, AMI, Ancient Mysteries International, is posting pieces of some of these ruins in Indonesia. And we've had Bruce Cunningham on the show a couple of times, but this tour is a once-in-a-lifetime kind of a deal. It's November 30th through December 6th. And probably the cherry of the whole trip is a chance to meet with Chief Geologist Danny Hillman, who has been excavating this unique pyramid, Ganon Padang, in Java. And he is not only uncovering amazing artifacts, he's getting dates back, carbon dates of 23,000 years old. Now, those are dates based on organic material they're finding within this pyramid. And I've mentioned it every time we talk, every time we're on this show, about how they're down and they're discussed not only rooms, but they're getting the frequencies, they're getting energy coming out of these rooms that they cannot explain. So there's a lot to check out in there. So if you're interested in joining Bruce, meeting Danny Hillman, and also Dr. Carmen Bolter, who is the director, producer of The Pyramid Code, the TV series Pyramid Code. She will be there with some other people who are experts on pyramids. Go to ancientmysteriesinternational.net and you can read all about it and you can get more information. And that tour is still being discounted for people who are listening on Earth Ancients. And actually, you can just email Bruce at info@ancientmysteriesinternational.net and get the details for the program. So check that out. It's something really, really to consider. Today, we are talking about sacred texts. And this is kind of an interesting thing for me. I don't know if you listening have read some of these newer texts. I mean, we all kind of looked at the Bible and the Torah is the Jewish Torah, but my whole thing regarding sacred texts is how they are transmitted. And for those who don't know about some of these books, there's a New Age spiritual book called The Course in Miracles. And most of that book was apparently channeled, meaning information came from a higher source and actually written down by, I think, two different individuals. And they claim to have no authorship in these books at all. I think in the end, the Course in Miracles turned out to be three books, kind of a guide and a teacher's manual. And then the third one, I forget what it was, Cliff Notes, I believe, of what the Course in Miracles was or is. But my guest today is Anita Mayer, and she has studied these ancient texts, specifically the Bible, the Jewish Torah, and we'll ask her if she's studied the Quran. But these are sacred texts, and they're sacred because their religious connotation is that they are sacred. They are written for people. They're written from the gods or the God. And Anita is a unique individual. She has a degree in criminology, and she is a religious procurement specialist. We'll have to ask her what that is, who thoroughly engages in finding strong evidence for God's existence. She's written a number of books. The book a little bit about today is Beyond the Bible Code, which is the newest book, but she also wrote the primordial language, Confirmation of the Divine Creator, and then In Search of the Holy Language, which fascinating titles. So this is interesting. So for me, as a program director, in the last 20 years, the whole idea of channeled content, channeled sacred information has always been fascinating to me. In history, we always heard about ancient oracles. These were people that would go into a trance and be able to talk about the various subjects, and they claim to have that information coming from a higher source. Now, what are these higher sources? They are unseen beings. They are higher ones. There's different dimensions of consciousness, different realities where this information is coming through. But today, we're going to ask Anita questions regarding these topics of sacred sex. So, Anita, welcome to the program.
Hi, Cliff. Thank you for having me today.
Great. Glad you could join us. So tell us, what is a religious procurement specialist? I'm curious about that.
Yes. Well, I procure evidence that, strong evidence for God's existence. That's what a procurement specialist is. But I'm also a visual pattern recognizer in the study of nature and structure. And my purpose with writing my books is that I wanted to bridge the gap between science and religion and to reveal that there is intelligent design in the framework of all that exists.
Interesting. You heard my introduction. I guess the big thing for me is, and we're going to talk a little bit about how the sacred text transmitted. I want to get your opinion about this, but you know, we're told that many of these religious books, like the Bible, are divinely written. And you reference Moses as having divinely written the Hebrew Torah. So, in your estimation, in your understanding, what does divinely written mean?
Well, I would have to go, and I need to start explaining what it is that I had discovered, or rather rediscovered. So let me start here. A lot of people are familiar with pi. They've been taught what pi is in school, 3.14.
Mm-hmm.
But there's also another mathematical unit that's found throughout all the natural world, and that's noted as the Fibonacci sequence. The sequence goes 0, 1, 1, 2, 3, 5, 8. When we add the last two numbers together, we get the next number. Okay, and so the Fibonacci sequence feeds into the golden ratio, which is 0.618, or inversely 1.618. And we get the golden ratio in the sequence of the Fibonacci sequence. It's 144 and 233 are numbers in the Fibonacci sequence, and when you divide those numbers, that's when you get the golden ratio. Okay, mm-hmm. So the golden ratio is a universal law, okay? It's a mathematical expression used to explain the mechanism behind form and patterns of growth, all right? So, and we see these units of growth in all the natural world. I mean, the Fibonacci sequence is when the next branch on a tree is going to grow, okay? And we see this unit of growth in all plant growth, human body, animals, insects, cell division, DNA, hurricanes, tornadoes, the stock market, even the life cycle of an atomic particle, when they smash those particles together at the CERN facility and they spiral out. Well, that spiral is the same unit of growth that's found in nature. And we see this also in the spiral arms of galaxies, and even in the distances between the planets. Okay? Mm-hmm. And so with that, I sought to link it to finding strong evidence for a creator. Okay? So what I did was I turned to the Bible, and I was looking for one tangible piece of evidence of something that the creator was said to have given to us. And I looked through all kinds of ancient books, Old Testament, New Testament, Oral Torah, the Book of Enoch, other ancient texts. And the only tangible thing that the Creator was said to have ever given us was the Ten Commandments that were given to Moses on Mount Sinai. So I thought, if it's a Creator that created everything in existence, then there must be some intelligent design to that writing. Okay, Scripture right. tells us that the Scriptures themselves tell us in numerous places throughout the Old Testament that these letters were inscribed by the finger of God personally. So I thought, okay, there has to be some intelligent design to this writing. So what I did was I opened up the Bible, Genesis 1:1, but I took the Hebrew version from the Torah. And I took the very first word of the Torah, which is the word barashit. It means beginning. And I took the very first letter of that word, which is the Hebrew letter B, known as a bet. And I right away I noticed that it had a unit of growth to it. It has a little leg that sticks out, then it gets a little bit longer, and then a little bit longer. It's hard for me to kind of explain it, but if you look on my website, Anita Meyer Books at Wix.com, you can get the illustrations of what this looks like. So what I did was to test this theory, because I needed to get a three-dimensional view of the letters other than them just being a flat surface in the Torah. So what I did was I took a bendable wire and I bent it in the shape of that letter, of the first letter of the Torah, a Hebrew letter B. And I took another bendable wire and I spiraled it around that letter with the same exact units of growth that are found in nature. Okay, it starts out small, gets a little bit bigger, and then it furrows out. That's the Fibonacci sequence. And it's also the golden ratio, 1.618. And that spiral pattern exactly matches that of a conch shell. If you can kind of visualize that, it furrows right out at the end and it spirals through the center. Okay, so now something amazing, I caught sight of something amazing when I started turning that spiral form around to all points of view. Holding it in my hand and just turning it around, looking at it, you know, I caught sight that, okay, you look at it in one view and it's the Hebrew letter B, okay? But you turn it upside down and it turns into the Hebrew letter T, Tav. And you look at it another way, it turns into the Hebrew letter Ayin, He. Turn it slightly sideways, Hebrew letter M, Mem, G, Gimel. What was amazing was that this one form that's produced from nature's law produces the complete Hebrew alphabet consisting of 22 letters plus 5 final letters.
Okay, so let's clarify this. So I see this in your book. You have an illustration of all the alphabet using this wire that you've bent, and what you're showing is that this one golden or the spiral is unique in that it actually can be manipulated into the complete alphabet. Is that the point?
Correct. Yes. They are projections from one point of view. Mm-hmm. When you turn the form around, it produces all the letters.
That's fascinating. Okay.
So it's not only intelligent design. It's not only intelligent design, it's divine design. And there's no other writing in the entire world that produces its alphabet from a single spiral form, which in turn is a product of nature's law. It's quite amazing. So that's the basis of what my book In Search of the Holy Language is about. But then I also link it to the science of sound and vibration frequency. I link it to the Great Pyramid of Egypt, the Tower of Babel, star constellations, quantum mechanics, particle entanglement, and even consciousness. Mm-hmm. It's basically in everything. And what I mean is...
You actually go a little further. You actually say there's a view of history in it with the past, present, and future, which I find is fascinating. We want to talk a little bit about that in a second. But In the Beyond the Bible Code, you state, and this is a quote from you, there is statistical evidence that the scriptures are of a divinely inspired and supernatural origin with a God-eye view of history imbued in with the past, present, and future, which I just mentioned. What do you mean statistical evidence? What does that mean?
Well, because there have been codes that have been found in the Bible Code. Okay, so let me explain here that not only is there, in my book, Beyond the Bible Code, I illustrate clearly that there is intelligent design in the Hebrew letters, okay? But not only is there intelligent design in the Hebrew letters, but codes within the actual text can be found, okay? Mm-hmm. And these codes, some of them that have been found, we know had already transpired, okay? And so then... these codes, we can search them after the fact. So they are prophetic in that sense. Okay? I can give you an example of one of the main primary codes that were found in the Torah code that I talk about in my book.
That would be great.
Yeah. Moses wrote 5 books of the Torah. Okay? And the first book, Genesis, when you start the book, you go to the very first Hebrew letter T, which is a Hebrew letter Tav, okay? And you count 50 letters to the next letter, and you get a Hebrew letter O. You count another 50 letters, and you get a Hebrew letter R. You count another 50 letters, and you get a Hebrew letter H. That spells the word Torah, okay, going forward from the first Hebrew letter T. So then we have to question why the number 50, okay, 50 50-letter interval skips. And it's because the Torah was given to the Jews on the 50th day after they left Egypt. Okay? The Torah was given to the Jewish people at Mount Sinai on the 50th day after they left Egypt. So that's the significance of why we find it at 50-letter interval skips. Then we go to the second book, the book of Exodus. Okay? And again, we find the first Hebrew letter T. And then we count 50 letters. We get a Hebrew letter O. Count another 50 letters. We get a Hebrew letter R. Count another 50 letters. We get a Hebrew letter H. And it spells Torah again, which is the name of the book. Okay? And this is spelled going forwards. Then we get to the middle of the book, the middle book of the Torah, which is Leviticus. Okay? Now, we don't find the word Torah, but we find the name of God, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Okay, we find the first Yud, and we count not 50 letters, but this time 7 letters. We count 7 letters, we get the Hey, count another 7 letters, we get the Vav, count another letters, we get the H. Yud, Hey, Vav, Hey, which is God's name, Yehovah. So why by the number 7? Well, because the number 7 in Scripture is God's number throughout all Scripture. Okay, so... Now we get to the fourth book of the Torah, which is the book of Numbers. And we find the word Torah again by 50 letter intervals. But this time it's being spelled backwards. Okay? And we get to the last book of the Torah, which is Deuteronomy. And again, we find the same word, Torah, the name of the book. And it's being spelled backwards. So what we have here is we have the first two books of the Torah, of the Old Testament, spelling the word Torah in Hebrew going forward. The last two books of the Torah, spelling the word Torah going backwards. And we have the center book. It's pointing to the center book, which is the author of the book, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, God. Mm-hmm. So we have the name of the book, and we have the author of the book. So that's showing that there is some there is intelligent design there. Mm-hmm. There is purpose in intelligent design.
Okay.
So another thing about the code. Okay. Another thing about the code is that where we find these codes within the context of where one would expect to find them, and it conspires both with the story and with meaningful associated numbers. So we can find codes in other books, like the story of Moby Dick, the newspaper. We can find these codes in all other kinds of literature. And the skeptics against the Bible code, they say that the reason that these codes can be found in excess and variation is because the Hebrew vowel and consonants, thereby making many word combinations flexible by similar sounding words. But here is the thing, is that the Hebrew, it does use vowels like A, E, I, O, U. It uses the vet and the bet and the yud and the ayin and the kaf and all those. But the thing is that maybe this is the way that the ingenious creator designed the code to work in the first place. Like, for instance, it works like DNA, like human DNA. So for instance, our human DNA, it goes by the sequence codons of A, T, G, and C. And these are three-letter words making 64 possible codons, which is enough to encode the 22 amino acids and make up the proteins that are essential to all life.
Hmm.
So it's just something to think about.
Yeah. For somebody like myself who's not religious, what is the, these are fascinating hidden codes and writings within the Bible that I find interesting, but is there something that everybody can get from these codes? As an example, when you say divinely inspired and a supernatural origin, would these supernatural have imbued the Torah and the Bible with certain information that we can use today as a prediction type of a tool or a premonition, or what is in there that we can actually extract?
Right. Well, you know, that's the thing. The Torah codes are not intended to be used as a means of predicting the future, but only as a way of realizing that the Torah has everything in it. Okay? So, you know, I have found codes where it says, you know, there's codes that say, you know, a comet will hit the Earth. All right? And then you'll find another code that says comet was destroyed. So with the codes, the beautiful aspect of the codes is that there is numerous probabilities. And you can't know the future until after the fact. Okay, then you can search the code and find it. But there's numerous probabilities in the code. And that's the beauty of it, because we have choice. And the Bible even tells us this, that you know, that the Creator gave us choice. And he's encoded the Bible code to work in the same fashion.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. You mentioned that there is a great deal of evidence in this writing that reveals that God exists. What's an example of that you can say God exists? Is that because these codes are meant to be found and reveal just the genius behind the writing?
Right. Well, I've also discovered too, you know, after all my code searching, is that the code has a lot to do with consciousness, but it's also quantum in nature. Okay? It has a lot to do with quantum mechanics, if you're familiar with that. Basically, mm-hmm. quantum mechanics is when atomic particles are observed, okay, we've noticed that they change paths from waves to particles. And this is just simply by human observation, okay? Just observing this. This is the experiments that were done with quantum mechanics. So this experiment with quantum mechanics and quantum physics, it implies that two particles are in two or more places at the same time, okay? And so simultaneously, this is a state of superposition and non-locality. All right, so when we find these codes, how the code is related to quantum mechanics, now the Bible code is that they, as quantum mechanics provides a range of probabilities, so does the Bible code. And consciousness plays a big part of that. So then I started thinking about it. And I started thinking that, you know, fittingly, you know, if at the most basic level, particles are really waves, okay, and they become solid matter, which consists all around us only when observed, all right, then the question remains for who is observing us. It would follow both logically and scientifically that for solid matter to exist, it must be observed. And therefore, an observer is required. And by that definition, that observer must come from outside the universe. And then we have to question, who is that observer other than God?
Fascinating. You distill down the Torah and the Bible and a sacred text into what you call an original language, an alphabet. What is that? What is the original language of discovery? And is that a language is that like a language that is that you extracted, or is it a language that is actually the writing of the Torah by Moses?
Right. Well, see, the Hebrew letters, okay, are also based on sound, frequency, and vibration. Okay? And the more I discovered this is because it gives us little clues in the ancient texts, like in the Book of Enoch. Okay? It tells us that this was a language based on frequency. Okay? We also read in the oral Torah, like in Kabbalah, you know, the significance of the Hebrew letters, like for instance, the word that a lot of us are familiar with, the magician word, abracadabra, is pronounced abracadabra, and it means, as I speak, I create. Okay?
Right.
And in the Kabbalah, it also explains to us that the Creator used the Hebrew letters to create everything in existence. All right? So there is inherent power in the Holy Hebrew language. Okay? And I've also done some experimenting, too, with a sonogram. Okay? And what I did was I pronounced the sounds of the letters kind of like om, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what I discovered with the Hebrew letter B, the first letter of the Torah, is that when I pronounced it the correct way, ba, okay, it produced an actual form that looks like the letter itself. Quite amazing. So,
yeah
so what I'm theorizing is that
words are powerful.
Yes. And you know, and it says in Genesis, it says, in the beginning, God said, let there be light, and there was light. He spoke, and it was a language based on frequency and vibration that created all things. And this language was the Hebrew language that was given, that was reiterated to Moses on Mount Sinai. And incidentally, that is the only place in which the Hebrew square block letters came into existence, which was given to Moses at Mount Sinai on the Ten Commandments, and the ones that we see in our modern-day Torah, which have been copied for 3,300 years, exactly the same as how the scribes saw them at Sinai. So it's quite amazing. Yes, it's a language that has inherent power in it. And that creates all things.
Mm-hmm.
It controls the natural world. And it's creating everything in the natural world because it's based on this mathematical unit of growth. It's kind of like the Force in Star Wars. It controls everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even the cosmos and the distances between the planets.
Very cool. What can you tell us about the Book of Enoch? The Book of Enoch is a real interesting text because it's almost like it is the supernatural discussion of Hebrew understanding of the universe and things like that. It's really fascinating. When I read Enoch's material, it's like, wow. But it seems to be like a part that is not really discussed a lot in traditional religions.
Right. Well, the Book of Enoch is really amazing, and it actually predates the Torah. Because Enoch, he was the great-grandfather of Noah, okay, and he was from Adam and Eve's third son, Seth.
Mm-hmm.
And Enoch lived 5,000 years ago. And the only way his book could have survived would have been on the ark with Noah, because Noah was his grandson. And it actually says that in the book too. But Enoch, in his book, and not only that, but in the ancient book of Jubilees, and in the Old Testament, and I even believe in the New Testament he's mentioned, Enoch is known as the first scribe in human history. Okay? He was taught this holy, it says that he was taught this holy language by God's appointed angel. Yes. And not only was he the first scribe in human history to learn this holy language and writing, but he was also the first calendar maker of the zodiac.
Mm-hmm.
He was the one that first created the henges, the henge. And in fact, the Great Pyramid is a henge. It's a 365-day calendar. And coincidentally, Enoch's number in Scripture is 365. Okay? And we see these henges that we find them all throughout the Middle East and in the desert. Some are small, some are huge, like at Stonehenge.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 365 day calendars. They're solar lunar calendars. And we also see this in the Mayan calendar, in the Mayan pyramids as well. You know, how is the Great Pyramid? How is it a 365 day calendar? It's because, well, you know, if you, the pyramid walls from corner to corner in a straight line, it is 9,131 inches, and there are four walls. So you take 9,131 inches times four, the four walls, and it equals 36,524. But when you round that off, it's 365. Okay, and then you also have, you know, the Mayan pyramids of Chichen Itza and the Yucatan in Mexico, you know, where they have four stairways, each with 91 steps for them at the top, which total 365 days in a year. Yes. So it's my theory that Enoch was the progenitor of all the pyramids, all the henges and all the pyramids that we see across the globe.
Okay. Yeah, so when you're saying that, are you saying that the ancient knowledge that was delivered in some way so that all these cultures could disseminate it and build their pyramids, or how are they, how are these other cultures getting that information?
Correct, yes. It was a pyramid system. But to understand this better, I made another discovery, and it's with the Great Pyramid of Egypt in Giza. Egyptologists to this day still have no clue why the chambers and the passageways were built in the Great Pyramid, okay, and the locations that they were built, all right? Now, when I look at that, okay, after I made my discovery of the Hebrew letters, I immediately noticed that inside the Great Pyramid, the schematics and the chambers from the king's chamber to the queen's chamber down the ascending passageway, forms a perfect Hebrew letter ayin. Okay? So now each one of the Hebrew letters has a significant meaning to it. Like the Hebrew letter bet, the first letter of the Torah, means house. Okay? The Hebrew letter ayin means I, an actual I, E-Y-E. So I started theorizing, well, if it has Hebrew origins to it and it has the holy language in it, what was the purpose and what was the function of it? So then I started to delve a little deeper, and I started looking at where the location of the Great Pyramid was built. And it is built on the coordinates of 30-30 on the earth grid, and that is in the precise location in the precise center of all the earth's landmass. Okay? So I said, okay, there's a Hebrew letter in the ayin, and it's built in the center of all the earth's landmass. What is the function of this? Well, my theory is that the Great Pyramid was generated with the piezoelectric effect, because it consists of granite, of crystal, and when crystal is vibrated, it creates a piezoelectric effect, okay, which can generate electricity and frequency. And the earth's crust, okay, consists mainly of granite. So it's my theory that the Great Pyramid was generated with the piezoelectric effect and was able to put out this frequency of the holy language to span all the earth landmass. And the Great Pyramid today still puts out a frequency of 6.7 hertz, which happens to be the earth's most beneficial frequency. So it's my theory that the Great Pyramid was there to bioengineer the earth to keep it in sync, to keep it in healthy sync, healthy frequency.
It's sure not going to go anywhere, is it? It's a monstrosity of huge amounts of weight. So there can't be any, other than the earth being destroyed completely, it's not going anywhere very soon.
Right.
It's huge. Fascinating. Yes. So, is it your belief that this piezoelectric energy delivered the contents of the sacred code to these other cultures, and then they just, somebody who was sensitive enough could pick it up, or was
Absolutely.
There information that was transmitted via actual manuscript?
Well, it's my theory that this was lost knowledge, okay? That they knew this knowledge. They had this knowledge of the holy language. You know, it goes back, and here's something really to think about, and I talk about this in my book too, is that the Tower of Babel. It goes all the way back to the Tower of Babel. And the Tower of Babel, it where we read in scripture, it tells us that they came to the land of Shinar. Okay, this is after the great flood, and everybody was wiped out except for Noah and his family and his three sons, and they went to the land of Shinar, and they all spoke one language. Okay, and with that they proceeded to build a tower that reached up to the sky. And with this tower, they could do whatever it was that they wanted. So if you kind of read between the lines, it tells you that this tower had some kind of inherent power. Okay, mm-hmm. And so I started theorizing, you know, why would the Creator come down and confuse the language? I mean, what was so important about the language? I mean, why couldn't he destroy it like he did at Sodom and Gomorrah with fire and brimstone? You know, so I theorized that there was some kind of inherent power in the language. And so I'm thinking that maybe it was some kind of like antenna tower, and it had some kind of influence over the environment. Very similar to the HAARP facility that we have, if you're familiar with HAARP, that's in Alaska.
Oh yeah, up in Alaska. Yeah, there's a lot of comments about it really screwing up our environment, our atmosphere.
Yeah. And so it's not just in Alaska now. They have HAARP facilities in every country under different names. And what HAARP stands for, it stands for High Frequency Active Auroral Research Program, HAARP. And these are antennas. They're high-power radio antennas, transmitters. What they do is they heat up certain parts in the atmosphere. And this can control you know, our environment to some extent. Now you start thinking that we have these all across the globe in every country, and this effect could really start affecting our weather. You know, and it can even be seen, if you really think about it in deeper depth, that this could be some kind of a weapon, you know, for like possibly the New World Order, in the sense that, you know, where entire national economies could be damaged through climatic manipulations by modifying or completely altering the climate in different parts of the world. You know, this could result in destabilization of agriculture and ecological systems. Okay, so I'm thinking that, you know, the Tower of Babel was something very similar to the HAARP facility. And so the Creator came down and he confused the language so that the Tower Project came to a halt. And that's where we get all the different languages across the globe today.
Wow.
But that's another field that I go into is the linguistics aspect of it. Is that, you know, we see all the writing that's found across the globe. The writing is very similar. Like, for instance, like the cuneiform. Cuneiform is known, the Sumerian writing is, linguists say it's the oldest. Okay? But when I look at the cuneiform, okay, what I see is that they are the Hebrew letters. The same as the Hebrew letters. The only difference is that they're turned sideways to the left. And there are little dashes in clay and stone. And the reason that they did that, it was sort of like a shorthand, because the Hebrew letters are curved. And it would be harder to inscribe them in clay or stone. So they use the dashes, kind of like a shorthand. And we see, you know, I've compiled a list of writing that's been found all across the globe, and there's similarities in all the letters. Okay.
Right.
And you can see the similarity in definitely associated with the Hebrew letters. Then it goes, we know that this is true, and linguists know that not only writing, but the languages all can be traced back to one primordial language. Like, for instance, the word cat in all languages sounds similar, okay? Like the English word cat. In Arabic, it's kitty. In Armenian, it's katu. In Cantonese, it's meow, the sound that the cat actually makes. In Chinese, meow. It's miu. Yeah, in Egyptian, yeah. It's mao. We've known as mao, you know, the Egyptian mao, the cat. But it's the sound, meow, or it sounds like cat. In German, it's katzi. But in the Hebrew, it is pronounced katul. That's how you say cat in Hebrew, katul. But when you break down, now this gets into the science of the holy language, is that the basic analysis by letter of the word cat comes from the Hebrew word katol, okay, which is derived from three following Hebrew letters, from KTL, which is the Hebrew letters chet, tav, and lamed. And these three letters indicate to wrap around. And it's the precise description of what cats do when they sleep. So that's how the word cat came into existence. Was originally from the Hebrew word katul. And then we get into the word like cuddle. It's also a spin-off of the word cat in the English language. And then the word kitten stems from the Hebrew word for a small child, which is called katan. And the English word for kid, referring to child, is another example derived from the word kitten and katan. And in Yiddish, a small child is called ketzel, and in German, kinder. And in Dutch, kinderen. So all the languages, scholars know that the Phoenician and the Hebrew language merged into the Arabic, Greek, Latin, and Roman by way of the Mediterranean, which later separated into Germanic, French, Italian, Spanish, English, and the many other dialects. All comes from a primordial language.
Exactly. You state that Darwinism, this theory of evolution, will be completely abolished when people understand the true nature of the Torah and the Bible. What does that mean?
Well, Darwinism, I don't know how that got into this, to the mix here, but the final purpose. Okay, all languages were confused. Okay, but the God's final purpose and intended use of the holy language. Okay, it will once again be used to create the new heaven and the new earth. Okay, and He will make everything new again, which is specified in Revelation 21, and He will also restore this pure language and bestow it to the righteous in the new kingdom. And that's it's in Zephaniah 3:9, I believe, where it says that the Lord will turn to the people a pure language. He will restore the pure language.
Okay. Fascinating. You discussed a little about the golden spiral and how the lettering is kind of a similar design. And you actually say something very unique. You say that the golden spiral is a microcosm of the arms of our galaxy. Can you describe that a little bit? And you actually show some examples in your book. That's kind of an interesting statement you make.
Right. Well, the spiral form that produces all the Hebrew letters, okay, that is produced from the Fibonacci sequence, which feeds into the golden ratio. Well, the spiral arms of galaxies, even tornadoes and hurricanes. And it that is the same unit of growth, okay, that spiral, that the spiral arms of galaxies possess. So when we look out there in the grand cosmos through our telescopes and we can see these galaxies, it's this unit of growth is prevalent throughout all the cosmos. It's not just here on the Earth. It's out there everywhere in the cosmos. And it's an orchestra. And it's all speaking and conducting this holy language. It is creating, it is producing everything, and it's controlling everything. And in fact, even when we are in, even in our brains, when we are in conscious thought, okay, and our neurons are sparking in our brain, they are producing what's called ring waves, which are seen on MRIs, brain MRIs, and these ring waves are the same unit of growth. So not only, so we may not be speaking the holy language because we're speaking these other dialects here, but our brain is thinking this holy language. So in a sense, we are communicating with it.
That's fascinating.
Through conscious thought.
You go in quite a bit. You go into quite a bit about Moses and the exact type of writing. And I think you said somewhere that in the entire Torah, there's only five or six spelled words or something ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. And is it your, I mean, you say that he wrote, I guess it's known that he wrote the entire Torah himself. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes, he did.
Yeah.
It says that, that Moses went in to the tabernacle, okay, that they built in the desert to commune with the Creator. And he was given little bits and pieces at a time. But when the final Torah was made, he always kept a copy in the Ark of the Covenant, in which all the other scribes would look to make sure that they were writing, that the letters were correct. They had to be exact. And there's all sorts of rules that go into writing a Torah scroll.
Yeah, tell us about those rules. It's amazing that you listed them. I mean, there's not one or two, like, you know, make sure you don't drink alcohol, make sure you have a good quill, and things like that. It's like pretty detailed. Tell us about that. Yeah.
Yeah, well, the letters can't be touching one another. They can't be touching. And if there's any mistakes, if there's any holes or mars in the parchment, it completely renders it unusable. So the scribes were instructed from Moses that they had to copy those letters exactly how they saw how Moses wrote them via God. Yes. And so these were painstakingly copied for over 3,300 years. And
right.
Today we find those exact letters in our modern day Torah. And the rabbis today,
the
scribes.
Anita, the thing I'm trying to get the point across is that it's a sacred system of writing, right? That's the point.
Yes.
Is that the reason that they're written in such a way is that each of these letters imbues information, imbues energy. It is like you are punching in a code. And that's why this the title of the book, Bible Code. But I think more to the point is, and I'm going to ask you more about Moses in a second, is that these writings, in your estimation, are divine and they're sacred because there is a transmission quality to the writing. Is that correct?
Correct, yes.
Okay.
And incidentally, you know, we're told in the Bible, in the Old Testament, that we weren't only get that God wrote the Ten Commandments not only once but twice. once Moses broke them, okay, when he grew angry, when he saw that the Hebrews were sinning, he threw the Ten Commandments down. And then he went back up again to God, and God inscribed them again. So I started thinking there must be something special why the Creator went out of his way to personally inscribe those letters. So there must be a certain, they are his minority report linking scripture to his word, to him, to the Creator. They are the original template, the original writing template. And with those letters, he created everything in existence. And he continually controls everything in existence.
Mm-hmm.
This is some of the most suppressed knowledge in the world.
Well, I think it gets covered up because of the manipulation of the church. And that's the big problem I've always had with religion is as a child, I was forced to go to the church and the Bible was part of it. The Bible was interesting, but dogma of mankind, for me at least, was the damaging factor in my interest in religion. But what you're bringing up is a whole different aspect. You're bringing up the sacredness of the information within these sacred texts. What do you think about that, what I said?
Yeah, well, it's my understanding that religion, okay, is meant to be a science. Or it's meant to teach us a science. And we've just lost that because, you know, the church has lost, they don't really base a lot off the Old Testament, which seeks to explain this information. And then there's so much more to it because, you know, not only did Moses come down with the Torah from Sinai, okay, he also came down with the oral Torah, which is known as Kabbalah, okay, but it wasn't actually written down in a book until just recently, 2,000 years ago. So it was basically just an understanding. And what the oral Torah does, it seeks to explain the science behind the Torah. Okay, like for instance, in the Torah, we're taught that baby males need to be circumcised. Okay, it tells us in the Torah that we need to do this, but the oral Torah tells us how to do it. So it gives us the instructions, and so we find a lot of the
Torah. When you say oral, what does that mean? If it's written down, so you're saying that there's another Torah that is oral, that is also written down, or is it kind of? I mean, well, explain that.
It was oral understanding at first, okay? Mm-hmm. But it's just recently in the past 2,000 years, because the Torah was given to us 3,300 years ago. But the oral Torah was not actually written down by anybody except for 2,000 years ago. Okay, so it was oral first, but then it was written down. And that's where we get Kabbalah.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. So here's a question for you that I don't know if you can answer this or not. So when I hear the story, and I'm at this just, you know, black and white. When I hear the story of Moses, we've had a number of people on the program talking about Moses, how he was raised by a Pharaoh, became a high initiate of Egyptian history, Egyptian knowledge, science, and that he was from Jewish parentage and led the Jews out of Egypt, so on and so forth, went to the Great Mountain, wrote the Ten Commandments. How do you describe Moses? Do you describe him as a channel to this divine knowledge? If I say channel, that means he is basically receiving this information from a higher source, And depending on what your belief is, this higher source was either a being who came, or beings, a number of people who came down, speak with him, or is it your belief that this information came to him as a knowledge that he wrote down in a precise manner as it was dictated?
Right. Moses, he was the facilitator of God's word. God used him as a facilitator.
Yeah.
But the entity that Moses talked to, okay, as I said, he turned out, if we really do the research, okay, especially what I've discovered with the Hebrew letters, okay, that they are produced from a mathematical unit that is prevalent throughout all the natural world, and it's out there in the cosmos, and it's everywhere. This is the writing and the language that whoever Moses spoke with, whoever he communed with, gave him this writing. This writing is a testimony that if it's a creator who claims that he created everything in existence, that he is the sole creator of everything, the proof is there. The proof is there. The letters are the minority report that give us the evidence that link us to this creator. He's showing us that he mm-hmm. created everything in existence with this language, and here he gives it to Moses. So, okay. Yes, Moses was the facilitator. He was somebody capable.
So do you think Moses had a special ability? Was he, because we don't read anywhere that Moses learned sacred arts. Well, we read a little bit about Egyptian. He learned Egyptian sacred arts of who knows what those sacred arts were. But, TV programs, the movies that have been made about Moses and mm-hmm. the burning bush and the staff that turns into a snake, that kind of magic mm-hmm. stuff. A lot of magic. We've had on our program here talking about the magic that the Egyptians worked with to manipulate people, to make them stand in awe of mm-hmm. the great force that these people could have, these priests. But when you're taking down dictation or whatever, that is leaving your own consciousness and allowing another consciousness to come through and writing this information down. So that is something mm-hmm. completely different. At least I have been Stan.
Mm-hmm. Right. Moses didn't do any of this on his own. Nothing mm-hmm. was done. He had no special powers, nothing, only through the Creator. And it does say that in the Bible, it says that he went in to the Ark of the Covenant in the tabernacle in the desert there, and he would commune with said Creator. He would talk to him face to face, or whatever that entity was, a spirit source that was there. And in my book, Beyond the Bible Code, I have found another code that no other Bible code searchers have found yet. And that there is hyperdimensional physics that are also found in the Torah code. Okay? And this has to do with the Ark of the Covenant. It has to do with the tabernacle, and it has to do with the Torah. The same schematics that the Creator gave Moses to write the Torah, because we see those in columns. If you're familiar with what a Torah looks like, it's a scroll.
Yeah.
And
right.
It's made. The Hebrew letters are written on parchment, which is animal skin. And in every Torah scroll, there are a certain amount of letters. There is, off of memory here, there's 304,805 letters, and it's 248 columns, so it's 304,805 letters in 248 columns on roughly 50 curtains per scroll. So now, mm-hmm. this schematics that he gave to write the Torah, that he gave Moses to write the Torah, is the same exact schematics and instructions to build the tabernacle in the desert. Okay. And also the Ark of the Covenant, where the Ten Commandments were kept. And what I found was that there, I found something very interesting. It's called a primer. And how it works is that, okay, so now we know that there is 248 columns and roughly 50 curtains per scroll. There are 42 lines on each one of these columns in a Torah scroll. So 42 is 6 times 7. In every column of a Torah scroll, we have the first word in every column starts out with every column, begins with a word that begins with the Hebrew letter Vav. Okay? Which Vav means hook. Each one of the Hebrew letters has a specific meaning to it. Bet means house. Ayin means eye. Vav means hook. And it also means and, when you connect something together. And so thereby it's hooking each column of print to the sheet of parchment. Okay, but in the desert, and when they built the tabernacle, it tells us again that the curtains were held in place by hooks that went around, that built the tabernacle in the desert. The curtains were held in place by hooks attached from one single upright column to another. All right, and so this is the connection, hinting to unity and spiritual connection. But what it is that they were instructed that the Torah scroll was to be constructed in the same fashion as the tabernacle, where each parchment sheet of the scroll was a curtain. Thereby, since each curtain of the tabernacle was fastened to its post by means of a silver hook, Vav, the Hebrew letter Vav, the Torah scribes made each column of the text to begin with the letter Vav, thereby hooking the text to the parchment. And what is that primer? The Hebrew letter Vav looks like an actual number 7. Okay? And when you put, as I said, 42, 6 times 7, when you put 6 Hebrew Vavs around in a circle, okay, you get the Star of David. And the center is the number 7.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's 6 times 7 equals 42, and there are 42 lines in every column in a Torah scroll. This is a primer. And I found this in the Bible code, too, is that in the very beginning of the book of Genesis, Genesis 1, I was able to find a code that produces the six-pointed Star of David. Also in the center book of Leviticus, again, I found it. And at the very end of Deuteronomy, I found it again. And it's this Star of David. What it is, are you familiar with the science of semantics?
A little bit.
It's a science of sound and frequency. Jenny was the first to start experimenting with this. He had a metal plate, and he vibrated this metal plate. He put fine sand on the top of it. And when he would produce certain sounds like ohm, that he would get a geometric structure.
Very interesting patterns.
Right. And so this primer, the Star of David, when you pronounce the sound, the frequency sound of you get that same geometric pattern, which is the Star of David.
Wow.
So I'm theorizing
that's a whole book right there, Anita. That's a whole book, right? Your next book, Sound of the Text by Anita May. Just gave you your title.
I like that. I like it.
Well, listen, in our last few minutes, the book's fascinating. The book is the Beyond the Bible Code. You actually have chapters. Now, you have a chapter is what is the knowledge code? You have the prophetic lineage code. You have other codes. Let's talk a little bit about the prophetic lineage code. I'm curious about how that is extracted. Give us some details about that.
Yes, there is. Prophetic
lineage.
I've got to look at my book to actually pull that code up to see what it was offhand. But it is a lineage code, and of course, it's in the story that talks about it. The lineage for the Messiah for the coming Messiah.
Hmm. Okay.
And let me see if I can pull that up real quick here.
I'm just curious because you go into you go into some extractions and passing. You drilling down like no one I've ever heard, no one I've ever read before. Yeah. And you're drilling down.
Okay.
And
yes, here
you're extracting material. Yeah.
Yeah. It's found in Genesis 38. Okay, and using equidistant letter skips of 49. Okay, this professes to the genealogy of King David long before any of them were ever born. Hello?
Yeah, I hear you. Go ahead.
Oh, okay, I thought I lost the connection here for a minute.
Oh, sorry.
So, but the thing is that Moses penned this in the Torah because, again, it was Genesis 38. Moses penned this long before any of these people were even born. Okay, so what's in the code is we find the name Boaz, and we find the name by 49 letter skips. Then we find the name Ruth. Okay, so so Boaz and Ruth were married, and they had Obed. Obed is found 49 letters by 49 letters, and then Obed begat Jesse, and then Jesse, King David. And that's all there in Genesis 38. But that story alone is telling about the genealogy of the coming Messiah.
Wow.
Yes, it's very deep. And there's another code too. Another one that is that shows that there's intelligent design in the codes is found in Genesis 2:7 through 25. When God talks about in the beginning where he planted a garden eastward in Eden, and he put the man Adam in there, and he created every tree for food. And in that story alone, that's telling us that, okay, we can find codes. There are exactly 26 words, and there may be more, consisting only of 82 individual letters. We find 26 mm-hmm. words of trees and plants just in that section in Genesis 2:7 through 25, telling the story. We find wheat, we find the vine, grape, chestnut, myrtle, date palm, bramble, pine tree, pistachio, fig tree, willow tree, pomegranate, aloes, tamarisk,
wow.
Oak tree, polar tree, cassia, almond, gopher. You find all these codes just in that little part of the Torah and nowhere else. Nowhere else in the entire Torah.
That's fascinating. The book is Beyond the Bible Code. My guest today has been Anita Mayer, and she has written a number of books that all should look at. And this has been an education because you have extracted some material that I hadn't even thought about. And by the way, when you get her book, you can download them. They're available on Amazon. They're richly illustrated too. She's done a very good job of illustrating her concepts with the Torah, the means, and how they relate to everyday nature and the universe. What do you want the reader to get from these books? What is the purpose of extracting this information? Obviously, to me, it's there's higher that is guiding us. If it's God, if it's a spirit, I mean, this is so over and above religion. It's fun. It's fun to listen to you. But what do you want people to get from your books?
Well, basically, I've written my books to prove the existence of a creator. And that creator is the one who announces himself as creator in the Bible. He says, I am the creator. There is only one. I am the great and almighty, the one and only, that have created everything. And so I sought to prove that and to also link science and religion to reveal intelligent design in the complete framework of everything that exists. It's a link.
Fantastic.
It's a link to our creator, to knowing our true origin, to knowing the whole story, the true story, and nothing but the truth.
Fascinating. To reveal on Amazon. Give us your website. Tell us what your website is. I'll actually be posting the website on the Facebook page, but tell us where we can read more about you.
Yes. My books are available on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble. They are available on eBook and Nook. They're available in over 200 countries. My website, you can also glean more information from my website about all my books at Anita Meyer Books at Wix.com. And I also have a personal email if anybody would like to talk to me and ask any questions. And my email is AnitaMeyer1@Hotmail.com. I'm also available on Facebook and Twitter.
And your phone number is, we need to have a date or night. Go ahead.
No, that I do not give out. I'm sorry.
I'm joking. You're just giving out so many emails. I'm like, okay, and my home number. We talked a little bit before we started the show. You're going to be speaking at a conference. Tell us about this conference. I think you said it was in October.
Yes.
For people who want to hear you. Go ahead.
Yes, I'm going to be at the APPS conference. And the APPS conference is the Ancient Artifact Preservation Society. And I will be there this October 9th, 10th, and 11th. And it will be in Michigan. At the Island Resort Casino and Convention Center.
Okay. What date is that again? Saturday?
It's going to be October 9th, 10th, and 11th.
Okay. That's Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Okay.
Yep. Cool. And there's going to be some other very interesting people there as well. Frank Joseph, who writes a lot for, who he's written books, I believe for Ancient America. Also.
Yes.
Also for Atlantis Rising magazine. Scott Walter is supposed to be there. He's on the History Channel.
Scott on.
Scott Walter, Unearthing America, I believe it is.
Yeah.
Chris Dunn from Ancient Aliens. There's going to be a lot of interesting people there, including myself. Yeah, so you don't want to miss me.
Yeah.
I have an hour PowerPoint presentation.
Post some information too. So, Anita, it's been a pleasure. A fascinating book, and I'm definitely going to drill in a little more on the content of that. And thank you, contribution. I think the listeners are fascinated by what you've discovered.
Yes, thank you, Cliff. Thank you for having me on the show.
Great. Thanks. So that's been my guest today, Anita Meyer, and Beyond the Code. She's written a number of books, and she has a fascinating view of these sacred texts. So have a look. Take a look at them. I will have them on Facebook. Go to Earth Ancients. Excuse me. Go to Facebook. Go to Earth Ancients and go to Group, and you'll see all of those. Of other Clifford Mahody will be on. I'm probably going to have him in a couple of weeks. Author Greg Braden is part of the program, and I have some surprises at the end of the month that I think will be of interest to listen. Have a great holiday, everyone. I hope that you are able to relax and enjoy the weekend.